when 10-15% of the people are coming in and showing you a picture on Instagram rather than opening the menu, you know it's working.
So people will come in and go, I want that, that one.
What
really?
That? I want that. Like, don't even open the menu to see what it might be. It's like, just give me that.
That's such an insight though.
Massive insight, and it was so key to us then building out even like our targeting demographics and stuff for people to come through just to see.
I love
like,
that. Hello and welcome to episode 33 of the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast. I'm your host, Gary Fox. This week on the Entrepreneur Experiment, we have Conor Sheridan, the founder of Mad Egg. What Mad Egg is, it's a fast casual restaurant here in Dublin, for any of you not familiar with it, and they're absolutely blowing up. They've become incredibly popular since launching in 2018, so I was really happy to get Conor on for a couple of reasons. Number one, I met him, really liked his story, really liked his approach. And number two, you hear so much negativity around the restaurant industry and around the bar trade and around everything to hospitality that it was really refreshing to meet someone who's making a massive success out of a venture in that industry. So what do we cover today? Today we cover the massive research Conor did to make his venture successful, how he de-risked his venture by doing an insane amount of research. Like the level of detail Conor went into blew me away. How in-depth he went into finding the costs, the potential overheads. Just for someone who hadn't experienced in the industry, he went and found out pretty much everything he could about the industry. So we learn how to secure a lease for a logistics nerd like me. Things like that are really interesting, going, how do you actually start the process? So a lot of people listening to this podcast are aspiring entrepreneurs or first-time entrepreneurs. So people who have might have very little experience in things like securing a lease. So I was keen to delve into that with him. How they became the fastest growing business Instagram brand in Ireland. It's a really good story. I won't ruin it, but if you're a fan of their Instagram already, I think you'll know how. We discovered how to find the best people. And not only that, but how to retain them and make them happy in an industry that is traditionally characterized by high turnover. And finally, for any of you who are a fan of Mad Egg, we discover how they make the chicken so damn tasty. This is episode 33. I hope you enjoy. Stick around to the end and I'll reveal all the details about our live event in Dublin. It's coming up on December 4th, right here in Dublin City Centre. So we'll reveal our first speaker today. And our first speaker is going to be Mr. Devin Hughes of Buy Me. Anyone who's a fan of the podcast will know Devin from his episode. It was a wildly popular episode. And that's not just according to Devin. I have the stats to back it up. So he'll be there with me on December 4th and we're going to announce our next speaker next week. So if you do want tickets, hang around to the end. I'll tell you exactly how you can get them. Enjoy today's episode with Conor. Conor, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Gary.
So give us a little intro as to why you're here.
I suppose started 2-3 weeks ago, kind of searching for content as we were talking about, just things to listen to that I'm interested in, and came across your podcast. Kind of got about 15 episodes deep.
That's great. Thought great plug already.
Yeah. Thought it was really, really slick. And it's just, I'd be really interested to listen to people's stories about how they kind of got to where they are, where they plan on going, how they think about things, like what their mindset is, what patterns they follow and stuff in terms of business side. And some of the guys really resonated with me from your podcast, obviously, because they're quite local and quite approachable in terms of like, this guy's not too far away from what I'm doing or... Mm. Whatever like that. So I just thought it was really cool. So I dropped your line and was like, fair play. Like just because...
And here we are.
Yeah, because I kind of... It's only something like giving that kind of feedback or kind of gratitude in the last like 2 years to people. Just well done. Like, because when I get a message from people to go, I think Mad Egg or something else is really cool or well done, like fair play. Like it gives you that little boost to go, yeah, well, I'm actually doing the right thing here and people like this. And
it's mad. Yeah. It's such, like, it gives me, like, literally, if I get a message, I'm on a high for the day. And it can often be, like, just a one-line thing, exactly like your message. It's just such a buzz because you're kind of putting all this stuff out there. It's like yourself, when you build a business or something, you put it out there.
Yeah.
And people might be loving it, but, like, a like on Facebook or a like on Instagram isn't the same as someone just dropping you a little note going,
taking the
really
time
enjoyed
to.
It.
Yeah. And it's massive because, as you said, you're putting it out there, you're putting yourself out there.
Yeah.
Like putting your neck out effectively to go, like, I think this is really beneficial for people or people are going to enjoy this or I hope they will. It's not like you just flick on the mic and hope for the best. You've thought about who's coming on, I assume. We'll see what the end
of this week.
Just free vouchers.
It is. It's funny you start with that. Like, I was thinking about that over the last couple of weeks. Obviously, I was thinking about different ways of doing the podcast and stuff. And yeah, it is... I kind of started because exactly like what you said there, I'm obsessed with people's stories. I used to be obsessed with, oh, what's the magic bullet? Mm. What's the secret that they did?
Yeah.
You know, when you're young and you're an early stage entrepreneur, you're always like, oh, there must have some sort of secret. And the step to that, it's the story.
And then I think once you get into it, it's the process that you enjoy the most.
Yeah.
You know, there is no kind of mountain or pinnacle. It's actually just iterative every day, trying to get a little bit better or just refine things or do new stuff. And I think that's the most exciting part of the journey.
It is. I think it takes you a while to recognize that. For me, it did anyway.
Yeah, big time. I was the same. Like before I started off, like in any of the roles I was in or jobs I was in previously, I'd look outside in at people and go like, how do I get there? How's he doing this? Or how do I do this? Why am I doing this type of thing? And then, it's just...
You look at the end point.
You do. You never look at like what it's really like. And you don't give any understanding of that kind of thing until you...
I don't think you can. I think there's no way. Like, we could probably sit down for the next 10 hours and share every single step of your story. And you still can't understand it.
Yeah.
You'll get a sense for what it was like. But just... Because it's often like the stuff where you're just sitting at the desk in the office going, oh, Jesus. What have I done?
Yeah, I got myself into it. I always use this example. People go, like, what was the best part of setting up Mad Egg or kind of doing any of this thing, and they go, it was probably when you opened the doors. And I was like, well, 10 minutes before we opened, our power went. Turns out we didn't check our loadings properly because we were cutting costs, so we had not enough power to run all the kit. Bit of a shock. So
boom boom.
Yeah,
nice spot.
So first round of customers in, we had no heating, and
really
the depths of February or March and stuff like that. And so those kind of things adapt and keep moving forward and stuff. But no, I use the example to go, like, what was the best was once we opened the doors and stuff. And it's like, absolutely not. I think we had 200 customers in the first week. Like, I was kind of sitting there going, what have I done? Like, have I really misjudged the marketplace, like, in a way? So, yeah.
I think in the early stages as well, you're so consumed by what you're doing that you don't ever just go step back and go, oh, look, I finally did it. I've achieved this. You're always like, right. You're just so focused on moving forward.
Yeah, big time. I think you're always grappling for air at the start. You really are. Like, you're kind of so consumed in every aspect of the business because you have to kind of wear so many hats and do so many things. And you're so emotionally invested in kind of getting it to this point. Particularly, every business is different. But for us, like, opening the doors, it's almost like show night, your first night. And so much goes into it. Do you know what I mean? And you kind of... As I said to you, like, you have to start with a chunky team. You have 25 people on the books from the first day, and you're kind of going, it all has to work in tandem for everyone to have this great experience. And it's a lot of pressure kind of going into it, but it did take me a little bit of time at start just to stop grappling every single day and just freaking out a little bit and kind of going, are they happy? Are they happy? Are they happy? Did they enjoy it? Did they enjoy it? Did they enjoy it? And then, like, kind of panicking a bit to just actually get your head above water and go, what's working? What's not working? Let's just kind of stick to our guns and what's working, refine what's not. Just be kind of nimble on it and be proactive. Proactive is the word I'd use for anything that, in the industry that I'm in, that you need to be. Such a reactionary industry by the nature of it.
And so take us back to, we haven't even introduced what you do yet. Take us back to
probably start with that.
Take us back to where, so obviously you're the founder of Mad Egg. So take us back and tell us a little bit what Mad Egg is and where you got the idea from.
So Mad Egg is a fast casual restaurant that opened up in March 2018 on top of Cannon Street. So we're all about free range fried chicken. So the emphasis or the idea behind it was kind of open up an affordable experience led restaurant that actually had food provenance at the core. Like, it doesn't sound probably whole very crazy now, but I suppose 3 years ago when we were looking at it, it was something very, very different. So the idea behind everything is sub €10, like, it's kind of that rebound effect. People can come and go. It's not breaking the bank, but it's also just like a slick place to go in terms of like atmosphere and whatnot. So we use our core suppliers, like, big relationship with them, very Irish folks in terms of our product, in terms of our provenance. So we use the Smith brothers from Navan, which is kind of the chicken bosses in Ireland.
They are
actually down the farm on Thursday to meet them. They have unbelievable ideas. They're first ever free range chicken farmers in the country. Oh. They developed a license with the Department of Agriculture, and really innovative. Like, they're actually running their farm, they're trying to like look at new processes around bee pollen to help fertilize farms and do stuff, just really, really slick stuff. Definitely. Stuff like that. We work with guys like Coughlin's, who are third generation bakers, FXBs, everyone knows them in terms of bacon and steak and stuff like that. So yeah, we just wanted to kind of create a really, really cool product, but using really good ingredients, using really good, really well sourced stuff, obviously the ethical focus and stuff like that. But no, it's gone well so far. So we've recently just opened the third one there in Dundrum in August. So relatively quick growth. So
I think, yeah, relatively quick is pretty much understating it. Like, that's, I was in the Dundrum last week. It's
how'd you go?
Class. Yeah, stuff. It was absolutely amazing. We went on a date night. to Mad Egg and the cinema. It was, yeah, it was spectacular, man. It was like the decor and just the staff actually were probably, you know, were absolutely brilliant. Really nice, really personable. Makes such a huge difference. Like.
It does, and like, it's a people business. Do you know what I mean? I was talking about the food there briefly, but I was talking about the people that provide the food, the suppliers. Yeah. So in all aspects of the business, it's all about people. So we're so lucky with the people we have. Are just great. They're really great. And for, as I said, we kind of refer to ourselves as an experience business. We kind of have team meetings every week or every 2 weeks with the wider team or the town hall meetings, and you can see some people's eyes roll up, and I'm like, we're an experienced business. And they kind of go, it's a restaurant. It's like, it is a restaurant at its core, but it has to be more than that, because it's what, 2,500 restaurants in the city with not a whole lot of people. Yeah, from when we opened in Camden Street, that 100 metres is 150 restaurants.
Are you serious?
Yeah, so it's kind of going, what, maybe 15,000 people walk up and down that street every day. You need to stand out. You need to do something different. There's a lot of great places opening up with really great food. Can't just be about that. That has to be the core, the basis. Yeah. Your food has to hit it out of the park, or else people won't go.
Yeah.
But you have to do a bit more than that. And whether that's like kind of thought around what music you play, what style the place looks like, in terms of what engagement levels the staff will have with the customer, or trying to do different quirky things just to kind of make it a bit more experience led. So yeah, that was a massive focus for us in terms of everything from the music to the fact that if it was a first date, somebody could pick up the DIY cheesecake and play with it together and break the ice and do something, and just something to kind of go, oh, I can actually engage with this product or this brand. So
you put a massive amount of thought into it, obviously. Did you own restaurants before, or how did you come up with that?
No, I didn't. My background, I suppose, to go all the way back and work.
Let's go right back.
No, I would have like studied economics in college. Left then, went to work in technology, so sales. So it was kind of like enterprise systems, selling them to universities. I was a family business involved in that, and then did that for a year, kind of seeing, I suppose, my dad in the capacity of running his own business was kind of what kind of got me interested in doing it. So that's when I first started really kind of jotting down ideas on paper. Everything from, it was actually an early equivalent to Buy Me.
Shout out to Devin.
That was great. Great product, great idea. Stuff like that, but like millions of ideas with no execution. You know what I mean? Yeah. You're on a piece of paper every day, you're kind of going, oh, I could do this. Yeah. But I probably won't do any of it. Let's go back to work and do this. So did that, kind of pushed it out of mind, went over to London then. I wanted to try and get into finance. So I did a master's in economics over there, got into it, came back here, started working in finance for 3 years. And then, it was the type of thing, like 6 months in, I knew it wasn't for me, but I needed an exit. So it was you work your 9 to 5 and then you're...
What were you doing?
It's an investment strategy. So it was kind of coming up with like, for corporate investors, if they want to invest their pension funds, or if they want to just invest big ticket sums, where they can invest, what the best strategy in terms of that economic climate was. So I got to review trends, see where things are going, what was popular, what wasn't popular, but I also got to specialize in the skills of kind of deep diving on companies. So their structure, why they're profitable, how they're profitable, how they work. And a trend pretty much comes up pretty quickly of why some companies are great, like internally, what they do, how they structure, what they focus on. People being the front of everything. Every company that's truly great really focuses on people. But no, it gave me a really good skill set that I use daily now in terms of being financially adept, being able to kind of work those numbers and stuff. But no, at that point, then I spent probably 18 months trying different things, because we had a conversation earlier on the way in here, pitched the online real estate platform to the NDRC. That didn't go further than that email.
But isn't timing just so important? Yeah, though? I think if you were pitching that right
it's
now.
It's too early, and I didn't have it. I didn't have a clarity. Didn't have enough clarity in my own mind. It was a lot of words jumbling and a lot of like gobbledygook going into it, which I could be poor from. But no, I did that. Loads of different avenues, looking at different things, like anything from, I was like, what am I interested in? I just used to revert back to that.
Yeah.
Because when I was came out of college, I spoke to a guy who owned a burrito bar about taking on a franchise. So it was interested in the food side. I could see the trends of people going more into like the fast casual dining, people moving away from what I would have viewed as overpriced and probably under quality. So, or the really top ticket stuff, because for that side of it. But the franchise thing just didn't work for me, because it felt like I was just stepping into another job again.
You'd so be a manager,
many,
effectively.
Yeah, you have so many restrictions. You've no creative control over it or anything like that. And like for me, creative control was the biggest desire for anything I was going to do. Just, I felt like I worked in blue chip firms, and while they're great, really profitable and really good to their people, it didn't really have any impact to what I was doing at any sort of level. And like, that really frustrated me. So that was the biggest drive to leave. So I looked at everything from gym concepts, because interested in health and fitness as well. I used to be fairly fat when I was younger, so I got into training probably like 5 years, 6 years, 6 years ago. No longer, 10 years ago, actually. Okay. Just forget all them. When I was about 20, got in massively into training, health and fitness, stuff like that. Dropped by 25 kilos.
Wow.
Yeah. So
doing what?
Just doing weights. Doing like powerlifting type of stuff. A friend of mine was really into training. He kind of introduced me to it. Yeah, so I used to carry a bit of mass, pretend it was for rugby. Didn't play rugby. So, so I was like, I should probably do something about this. But now, yeah, got into that, and I was really been into that ever since, and all aspects of that. So actually the first restaurant concept I had was around health food.
Yeah.
And it was around kind of like, it was actually a vegan slaughterhouse. Yeah. So
I love it.
Like, yeah, it was kind of like, called the Green Hook. So it was like, you walk in and be all vegetables on hooks, like a butcher's. You come in, it's done out like a salad bar. I've done different levels of that, and that was the concept I had. And
it's a good concept.
Yeah, it was about 3 years ago, and I was kind of pitching that. So I used to just like, going off on a tangent here, but I used to just like get different concepts, like what for different businesses, and just put them on PowerPoint and just like visualize them. Like maybe that was like the equivalent of stock photos or Pinterest,
nice.
Or go on to Fiverr, spend a tenner on a logo, and it makes it feel alive. Then it's like, this is a business, even though it's just on PowerPoint. So then I used to like be around like the gym stuff or the food things. I used to just flick them off to real estate agents and be like, if they're interested in it and they're willing to put it into a location and think it's a real business, with a big bullshit spiel in the back about how it is, then this could be something. So I used to just do that. I was doing that for a year, far enough, going to different places. But no, that was the first one. I moved away from that because of the fear of, at the time particularly, it only being a lunchtime product, and you're probably only doing 15 hours of revenue a week.
Okay.
And I just wasn't willing to take that risk then. Probably now it'd be more of an all day trend. So
it's interesting that the rise of, you know, shops and places like that in the last couple of years, that trend really has.
It's just like, I eat a lot of greens. Like one meal a day probably would be your salad-y type buzz. You keep it light. If you're on your feet particularly, it's good. It's just good, the nutritious food and stuff like that.
I'd imagine it's a high markup as well.
Yeah, there can be. It's obviously a lot of spoilage pretty quickly and stuff like that.
True,
You need to be really predicting your customer and stuff. And I thought it was good, but I kind of said for myself, will I go out for dinner and eat that? No, I wouldn't really.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I probably wouldn't. I wouldn't. It's not for me, and I'm sure people would now, but so if anyone's out there and wants to open up the Green Hook, hit me up.
The franchise is now available.
But no, that was the first one, and then there was a couple of different iterations. Obviously, my background was not in restaurants, so it was like, step one, put all the stuff on PowerPoint, on paper. What does it look like? Who am I targeting? What am I doing? Who are my customers? Where am I getting the product from? Very aware that I've never run a restaurant business before, and everyone's saying like, you're mad, like this is such a difficult industry to get into, what are you doing, you know nothing about it really. Just putting something down, putting numbers down, putting a PowerPoint down isn't running a business. But for me, it was a start, I suppose. So I literally just started knocking on doors, met like 10-15 different restaurateurs around Dublin City, number one, to get advice on what they thought about my product, what number two, to try and build up some interest. So I think kept in touch with two guys then over, still in touch with them. One is my business partner now, so.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I called into him with an even different concept back then. So it was about like, kind of like fat sandwiches. And he was a bit dismissive at the time.
I was like, oh, I'm going to have to bite on this one. Yeah, yeah. Support fat sandwiches?
Yeah, he was like, I don't think you should start a business with fat in the name, or something. People are going to go. I was like, but that's the whole USP.
I think people would. Yeah. I like to know.
So I was like, yeah, but the whole USP is that these massive Whopper, like, yeah, big fat sandwiches, like, because we're such a big sandwich eating culture. Huge, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. But to get better now, but at the time, again, like, there wasn't a whole lot of great places to go get one. Similar enough, that was his kind of input into it, and he was actually quite right then to go, like, what are your trading time? It's lunchtime product again. Like, it's
okay.
Unfortunately, you have to look at the bigger picture. You can have a really cool idea, but you're in a market like Dublin, your overheads are so high, and everything in this industry is notoriously low in terms of like profit margins and stuff like that. Like, that you just need to try and get something that you can trade as many hours in a week as possible.
It's very interesting you were able to dig into that, though. I think a lot of people start without doing that research, yeah, that due diligence. I just want to go back on that there. You met, what, how many people? 10?
Seen 10 and 15, yeah.
I'd say. But shared your concept. I think some, yeah, people are afraid to talk about what they're going to do because they have that fear then of like hearing no.
Yeah, like I did have that, I'm not going to lie, a little bit. But then I looked at it and I was like, people can try and execute it or do it, but they can't think like you. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They didn't come up with the idea, so they don't know how it's going to work, really.
Yeah.
And a piece of paper is very different than really thinking about it and kind of having that focus. So no, after a while, I got that from my dad, actually, from sitting down, and he's very much my reference point for a lot of this stuff. And he was like, you just have to get out there. Like, you just need to know exactly what you're going to be working with. Like, what are the exact margins all these guys are working with, rather than just taking it off Google, work out where their pain points are, what happens, who they're targeting. Like, obviously, behind the scenes in your own head, be looking at what's working for them, what's not working for them. So I met people who were doing unbelievable business. I met people who obviously also weren't.
How open were people?
Mixed. Most people were open, trying to scare you off for the most part. But no, people are really open and great with their time. I think some people are a little bit defensive when you ask them about their business, and I could be a little bit probably direct in terms of like, how many covers are you doing?
Like, unusually, not an Irish trade, definitely.
Yeah, it could be like, how many covers are you doing? Which is multiplied by their dish price, basically how much money you make, which isn't. That was just the naivety in me to be like just nervous going like, what's realistic here? So, because I was building models all the time off these different products to go, if this is a 10 euro price point, 15 euro price point, 20 euros, if I can like do 100 people a day, 200 people a day, like, this is how much I make, this is the overheads for this. So it's constantly like editing it after you've beaten each person.
Okay, basically. So you offset your lack of experience by doing massive research.
Massive amount, yeah, really. Like, looking back on it, it really was. And then when I meet other people who are setting up businesses now, and probably the one thing I say to them is like, that due diligence to start is just so important. Mm. It's not like you have to spend a year doing it. Fortunately, I had to spend a year doing it because I just started from a really standing start, and I had to kind of build that knowledge, but I also had to find locations and stuff like that, which we'll probably get to a little bit later.
What would you advise people, actually? Let's just dig into that a wee bit. So a lot of people listening to the show are kind of aspiring entrepreneurs. They have ideas, kind of exactly like yourself. They have ideas in a notebook and they're not sure how to actually flesh that out a little bit. So what kind of key areas is important to look at? I know it's different for restaurants probably.
For any business, I suppose customers starts there. Like, who are you targeting? Why are you targeting? How are you going to get them in the door? Those three questions. Like, for any business, like, obviously your revenue is your customers. A little bit more nervy for a restaurant because it's not like you're setting up a B2B or a B2C real problem solving business where you're going, this will save you 5% of your turnover. It's more like, what's going on, like, in the market? What will drive people to you, or drive people to you? So yeah, customer number one, knowing who they are, knowing why you're targeting, why they'd want to buy off you, go to you, be associated with you, because that's what they're effectively doing, is associating themselves with your brand. So that number one, and then building back from that in terms of building a structure around a business. I don't mean knowing exactly every piece of it, like your, how big your team is going to be, what they're going to do, etc., but trying to put something on paper to go, like, finger in the air as much as it is, but how much could I sell, would I sell, what's that look like, where do I get to at the bottom line of this? I think that's just a really important place to start, to have a knowledge on that. And if you don't have a knowledge on that, find someone who does. Okay. Find someone who can put that together for you. Because here you go with your gut and you go what you want, but you need to have some sort of numbers or something behind it to back it up. Because probably just even this week, or I met a friend of mine who's looking to open up a gym, and he'd met one or two gym operators who gave him costs, and I was like, he had some stuff written down on the page, and I was like, how many members do you think you'll get? And he said 500 in the first year is fine. So took out an Excel spreadsheet, and just put them down on paper based on the cost that he had in his head. He was at 78% net profit margin. So I was kind of going,
can
like,
we invest in him right now?
So I was going, but look, wow. Like, and he was like, oh wow. And I go, yeah, look, like what's probably the average margin here? Let's look it up. Let's do a bit of research here. It's 15-20%. And I was like, it's massive amount of hidden costs. You just need to be aware of, like, you just have an awareness of what you're going into and stuff like that. I just think is really important as well. You only get that from speaking to people and kind of doing due diligence as a start.
So then what was your next, were you pitching your concept to them? Had you the idea from Attic go back to these people, or what way?
No, so actually met the people, kind of refined it then over time. Steve, my business partner in Attic, was one of the guys, got on really well with him, really sharp guy, and pitched me at Fat Sandwich, hoping he'd be like, where do I sign? So he didn't do that.
Shut up and take my money.
So that didn't work out. We actually would meet every 3 or 4 months because I was so hungry for it that like I'd just randomly ring him and I'd be outside the unit and go, I'm about to sign a lease here on this concept. Do you want to do it? And he'd be kind of going like, no. Like, okay. And one of the ones I did sign the lease, but fell through. A unit on Dawson Street, thank God, at the time was just the wrong idea. It wasn't Mad Egg. And okay. It was just like, just a bit too naive. Fell through for whatever reason. Then found the location on Cameron Street. Pitched them on what I was thinking of doing in terms of landlords. Really good guy. He was like, buy into young Irish, young business minded people or entrepreneurs. He had like 80 offers on the location from loads of different...
80
offers, that's the way the market is like at the moment.
So let's dig into this now about locations, because this is something I find really interesting. I think for anyone that's going to open a customer facing business, it's probably one of the biggest hurdles to come across, especially in Dublin right now.
Yeah.
How do you get your location?
So I started back by saying, know your customer. So for all the concepts that I was doing, they're all different food brands, and obviously people have different tastes, but they were kind of focused at the same different customer. Each brand was like an iteration towards Mad Egg at the time. Like even from the slaughterhouse thing to the fast sandwiches, they're a little bit edgier. They weren't as sanitized, but I felt was already out in the market. They were kind of targeting that like 15 to 40 or whatever, but it's hopefully for everyone now. But that kind of person, so it's like, so you're looking at areas then, you're going, I need to trade 12 or 10 hours a day, 7 days a week for this to really make money or to even survive. Because if you're going to only have a Monday to Friday business and you're cutting off your arms by your face there. So looking around the city, looking for locations. Obviously, it's not that a huge amount of high volume streets around. So that's, you pick your areas, you pick where you want to go. I said to you before when we met for coffee that what I did was a little bit more detailed. I took development plans for where things were going to be built around the city. So
I love this. Like I've talked to people about this already, about this idea you had. Like this is genius.
Yeah,
I think.
And I can't take full credit for that or any credit really. It was like one of the guys who was a pal of my dad, works in CBRE, and was like, just look at them. So it's probably a good shout. It was an absolutely unbelievable idea.
So you looked at city development plans?
Yeah, for all around the area. So I was looking at, I go, what's coming down the lines? I was looking at obviously where we end up in Cameron Street, Harcourt Street, all the offices being developed, all the stuff, all the plans for the hotels. So this is just more people, more bodies, more making your brand possibly more visual. Obviously, I wasn't the only one doing that when there's 80 offers on the location.
80 offers, that's bananas.
All mostly coffee brands or international brands and stuff like that. But no, I met the guy, gave him presentation, PowerPoint style, took out the projections. Right. Very formal, suited and booted, so like really over the top.
So you actually had to pitch the landlord?
Yeah, 100%. Wow. Like any of the locations I went to start, I would have to pitch it. Stand behind it.
So the landlord would be like, right, I want to meet you, I want to run through your finances. And does the agent do that or set that up, or how does that work?
No, so we got for the first 3 units, negotiated them all ourselves.
Okay.
So didn't use any agents.
How did you find the unit?
Daft.
So it was listed.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was on Daft, but outside of that it was yeah, putting in, I made a letterhead with the company name and just put it into every restaurant. Bit ballsy to say, if you're not trading well or you're not happy, give me a ring on 08 whatever. Couple of calls.
I like that idea. Those, so yeah. you knew where you wanted to be, and you put in letters going, if you're willing to,
yeah, if you're willing to leave, we can talk about it, we'll do whatever, or just amazing. Might help you get out.
That is ballsy. I like that. Yeah. That's a little hack.
Yeah, yeah, it's good. And then follow up with a walk in and get chased out the door by some people.
What have you heard?
Yeah. So yeah, no, look, that was the location then. And like, just to go back on it, at the time I wasn't with my business partner. I agreed to deal. It was actually a quasi similar concept, and approached him, like that thing, was speaking to him over time, getting a voice off him. He's a bit more experienced in the industry than me, and we'll go a bit more, and literally rang him, brought him up there, and was like, the lease is signed.
And you got the lease,
going to do it, done and dusted. Okay. Your man's bought in, I'm looking for builders. And he's like yeah, look, let's do it, like straight on the side of the street. And I go, all right, fine, shook hands. Then spent, we had to go for planning and everything, change of use. That was going to be 6 months. So I was like, we've got 6 months to really like get something going here.
Wow.
So time starts taking, obviously, a bit of pressure on.
So what happens in those 6 months? Are you paying rent? Are you...
No, so you negotiate. It's the power of being your own negotiator. Now I negotiated 6 months rent free.
Okay.
So to get you through, but it was obviously subject to planning. So you're not even effectively... You don't have any kind of stake in the building until it gets approved for planning. So you give yourself that kind of breathing space. So it's probably 4 months to the planning side, and then 6 months rent free. So you've got 10 months until any real overheads go out. And that's how long it took. So we got a production kitchen in Fairview and started testing different stuff. And this, the Mad Egg concept, like the fried chicken sandwiches, was one that came up probably the first meeting. And we talked about it.
You hadn't nailed down the concept?
No, not yet, no.
I love the story.
Yeah. No, like, just being honest, it wasn't good. We were looking at a ramen concept, we were looking at Mad Egg's concept, and the vegan slaughterhouse again, the ones that we had. So playing around with all of them, we were like, what works? What, like, trying all, refine the product, refine who our market was, and what will have the widest reach, but what do we think was the best? And ultimately, like, we've eaten all the stuff and we're going through it and refining the brand. And then with the chickens, Amazon, when we ate them, we were like, these are deadly.
They're absolutely deadly.
Yes,
they're absolutely unreal.
And this was like the first iteration, so it was nowhere near where we are now. We hadn't even started tea brining and really anything back then. We were doing buttermilk brining. Yeah. So we started all the way back from then with different variations of chicken, different styles. Then we worked on how we were going to brine it. Was it like buttermilk? Then we end up doing tea brine for 36 to 48
What's
hours.
What's brining?
So brining is effectively the process of when you get your chicken in and you put it in a liquid, either a buttermilk or a tea, to tenderize it. So it makes
tea.
So, yeah, it's tea. We use teas. We use breakfast teas.
As in the tea we normally associate with drinking.
Yeah, you bring it up to boil and then you kind of drain it out and just leave it there, put the chicken in. You do it between 36 to 48 hours and it just... whatever chemical reaction it has, it tenderizes it. It seeps into like the muscles of the meat and stuff, making it sound really, really tasty.
I haven't had breakfast yet. It's what is it now? It's 10:30. I've had two coffees and no breakfast.
Yeah, too scientific there. But no, yeah, so it's really tenderizes it, and it's a game changer in terms of, there's a lot of guys in it around the world. Mm. So we got inspiration from them, but no, game changer in terms of like moisture, like, because I suppose to go back on the concept, like, but the Mad Egg thing with fried chicken sandwiches, the goal was like, twofold. It's like, what was the biggest selling kind of Irish thing ever? Chicken fillet rolls. It's like, how pretty crap are they really though? Like, do you know what I mean? And then it's like, you go into every restaurant and do a bit of research even, and the most solid protein in the country is chicken. Everyone buys it in all the supermarkets. The quality's quite low, and even in restaurants, it's an afterthought. It's dry. It's just covered in sauce. It's just like, for a picky eater, we were kind of like, there's a massive opportunity here that no one's doing in terms of like making this chicken fillet roll style thing into a premium product, really focusing on really good cut of meat, number one, and then all the process that goes around that. So yeah, it started there. So we started doing loads of different iterations, started with the chicken, different elements, the spice mix, which would be the coating, stuff like that. Obviously the brining worked it through. That took us about 3 or 4 months actually.
And how were you doing that? Were you doing it at home in your own kitchen, or
we had to do it for you? We rented out, once we decided on it, we had a production kitchen out in Fairview. Just a room with like couple of fryers and stuff like that.
Okay.
So yeah, did it there. We meet up there 3 times a week for about 4 or 5 hours pop, and just keep testing different iterations of it. Started with the chicken, then with the bun, down to lettuce and to pickles and then different sauces. Just went from there.
It sounds like the best job in the world, but I imagine it was quite hard.
Say I easily ate, before we opened, about 2,000 or 3,000 chicken sandwiches. No joke. Like in the 9 months leading up to it, just so much of it. But no, every time we were eating it, like we were kind of getting that, go back to like momentum behind you, and we knew the concept then.
I get you, yeah.
Because it's like any part of this whole story coming to now is you've loads of different business ideas or things, but there's no real focus. When you pick one thing and you know it's kind of in your gut, the best thing, and then you kind of refine it and it's getting better, you can see it getting better. That was when the excitement started to build, and
you've got a target then, you're working towards some concrete.
And we were like, we had the product, we're like, let's refine the brand around it. And we were kind of thinking chicken and egg, mad egg, like it's kind of...
You bent me to the punch asking where the name came from. I love it.
So it was something very Irish as well, like it was kind of like that chap's a mad egg or stuff like that, and we thought it was cool. And it's kind of symmetrical as well, so it fits, you know what I mean, just in terms of how you look at it and it. So yeah, and then one day we were out having a coffee and just wrote down get laid, get fed, which is our slogan. I was like, let's go with this as well. And he's like, yeah, this is pretty funky, like, so let's build.
It's different, like, it catches your eye.
Out, you know what I mean?
When you walk past, I was thinking, when I walk past your place, it's just the egg, just always catches my eye.
And we were kind of like, yeah, stuff like that, we kind of sort of refine it then what's it going to look like? We know the product, we know the name, we know that. It's just start building the experience. So that was the rest of our time spent then. Obviously, keep refining the product and stuff like that, but building the experience in terms of what we want it to look like, what music we want to have, how we want it laid out. So with the first unit, we were lucky then that we had to do a bit of structural building work, but when we stripped it back, there was a lot of really slick brickwork and stuff, natural stuff. So part of like working to a budget and not having to use as many materials and leave the bricks out, which is helpful. But like,
I was going to ask you, where did the look come from? Because it's very specific. Did you work with an interior designer or an architect, or how did you come across that?
So we had architects who helped design it. They're more kind of for certificate stuff and professional services than design focus. But no, we did give us some good inspirations actually. So we were looking probably more along the, each unit split between like light and dark in a way. So it's kind of corrugated and steel and like day and night type thing, which was kind of the team we had in terms of the design. And against the white tile and stuff like that, that came from one of the guys in terms of the day and night, but to fix the kind of design features and stuff like that, we just kind of went with what we thought was slick. And obviously what could cover the, what was square meterage at the lowest cost.
It's brilliant, and people don't talk about that enough. Often like the restriction you put yourself under can lead to the best creativity. You have an unlimited budget, you've unlimited choice, and you get to paralysis by analysis of like, oh, we can do this, we can do this, we can do this. Whereas when you're limited, sometimes it's the best.
Exactly, and we were very much limited, so we were kind of going, like most of our budget was spent on the structural work, like getting the place ready to be a restaurant, because it was a mix of two units, it was a hair salon and a cafe beforehand. So after that, we were very much pretty tight in terms of budget. So we were kind of like, our big artistic pieces were like neon, like whether it's the one out front or the internal neon sign, which catches the eye, but like not cheap, but we just had to be realistic. So we went with like corrugated steel and stuff like that, and kind of a lot of box work, and played off the character of the building, that being kind of a little bit more aged and stuff like that. So, and it worked well, it came out well, and people liked the look of it, and it was slick enough.
You said design experience, that sounds quite broad. Like, how did you even approach starting that?
Yeah, so it's kind of, when I was looking at any kind of business going into, obviously your focus on your customer, like for us then, you say an experience, and I really feel like in this day and age people spend a lot of more time alone or a lot more time working or a lot more time engaged in their phones or their laptops. So it was like, they use venues like ours or restaurants or businesses like ours as a meeting point or a place to catch up with a friend for 30 minutes, an hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever it is. You know what I mean? You come in and you go somewhere, it's not going to break the bank, and you can kind of enjoy it. So we kind of said, like, that's your starting point. People are coming here to see someone they haven't seen in a while, or they're coming on a date, or they're coming here with their friends, and you're kind of going, let's just make everything that goes into that really slick. So started with the music. We're like, what kind of music do you want? It's like old school hip hop type stuff, and played off that, and the acoustics of that, how it hit off the steel, how it hit off the walls. Started looking at like getting guys in around that, so getting real bass. We put bass on the ground in Cameron Street, so the bass hits the floor after 5 o'clock, we turn it up, and just that type of thing, and kind of a bit more energy and choosing different music for different beats for different days, the faster the beats per minute on a weekend, you get people more energetic about going out and stuff. Like, you put a lot of thought into it, like, and stuff.
I gotta stop you. Like, the level of detail here is bananas. I've never met a first time entrepreneur who's gone into this much detail. Like, where does this come from?
Became so obsessive about it because I suppose you had the 10 months from when effectively we agreed the deal to get to planning, to get to open. This was the only thing I was focusing on. So every single part of it was...
But still, though, like, this is like... Yeah. There's detail and then there's this.
Stuff. Yeah, I know, yeah.
Are you extremely detail-oriented in everything you do?
I can be, and then I can be all over the place as well. So my business partner always says, like, calls me admin hero. Hand me a piece of paper, an envelope, and it'll be gone by the time we get to the car. Like, just terrible and stuff like that. But yeah, when it comes to certain things, I can be. Like, I think when I did the startup cost for the restaurant, I had everything down to the number of forks and where I priced them up and sent it on to him. And he was like, holy shit, like, this is very anal. Like,
this is either the best idea to get into business with this guy or the worst.
Yeah, intense character, obviously. Yeah.
So your stock drawer must be like, you know, talking earlier Monday to Friday.
Yeah, no, it's not. Like, it's funny. With certain things I really am and other things I'm not so at all. So it's kind of...
That's phenomenal. It's funny, so down to the beats per minute.
Yeah, just really thinking about, like, the music, the style of music, to use different parts of the day, when to use, what would, even the day of the week, if it's a Monday lunchtime, people might be still a little bit shook from the weekend, like, you're easing into it, a bit of Phil Collins or something, like,
okay.
Well, no, obviously not, but do you know what I mean? You kind of think about that and different times, and then the experience being, just the type of, how many group seats creates an atmosphere versus how many individual seats. Yeah. So we want to have, obviously in the centre of the room, we chose high tops because that's where the noise can travel externally. People can feel a bit more private in the two-seaters in the sides of the room. Mm. So they can get a bit more intimate, but you still have the noise that's travelling up above them, so that adds to an atmosphere and stuff like that. So,
okay.
Yeah, that was kind of from that level all the way out to then how we delivered the product. So stuff like the brand, the grease proof, like, we were hoping, we knew it looked slick, we knew it tasted great. So we were kind of going, hopefully people... We're going to take photos of this, so
it's very Instagrammable.
Yeah,
it's very Instagrammable.
I'm not going to lie, that was definitely on my mind from the very start.
It has to be for any business now. I think any business, no matter what you're building, as long as you're a customer focused, I think you have to be thinking about that.
Yeah, 100%, because people we're targeting are the most active users in social media, and it's such a free or cheap, depending on how you use it, way to engage customers and get people in, particularly with this type of business. It's perfect for it because people eat with their eyes, you know what I mean? And they see it, they're like, wow, I want to go there. And it's not like it's a massive purchase for a lot of people. It's like, I'll go and try it. Yeah. You kind of reel them in. And then if they like it, they keep coming back. And that's, And like, big element of DIY Cheesecake was around that. Like, we knew people were going to, we knew it was slick and tasted great. But we were like, we know people are going to take videos of this because it's different every time. It's like, look at my masterpiece versus yours.
It's funny you said that. We were there last week. I got my burger or my chicken fillet came out and there's two young lads there beside me, like, say young lads, they're probably 18, 19, they're like, oh man, look at that, I'm starving. Like, the minute theirs came out, two phones out, and they were like sending it to their mates and stuff. It's very much that must play a huge part in your marketing.
It does, yeah. It's probably the biggest way we get business. So it's funny, when, like, we're at an inflection point with it now. It's like, probably we were the fastest growing business Instagram page in the country.
Really?
Yeah, which is great. Bit of a pat on the back there. Like,
especially now when it's getting extremely tough to build on Instagram.
But it was, so, like, it was massive. And I think, like, it was born more from, like, I always knew we were going to focus on it. And we always knew as well, we talked about it. But how much we really did in the end was based on, we weren't happy with the number of people coming through the door at the very start. Okay. Obviously, the location itself had the vinyls up. It's a real lunchtime area in terms of offices. So it was actually queues at the front door to start for lunchtime. But nobody came in the evening because everybody's gone home from the offices. And it's a little bit around the corner from Cannon Street. So people aren't going to walk around. So, like, how do we get out? How do we get this imagery out here? I happened to come across a customer, Freddie. He's Raw Dublin. Give him a shout out if you're ever on Instagram. He's an unbelievable photographer. He took a couple of photos.
Okay. We'll link his handle in the show notes.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, he's a good dude. Took some great photos and posted them out, and the reaction was unbelievable. I think he did a cheesecake photo for us, and we went up like 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 followers. doubled our cheesecake sales for 2 or 3 weeks.
Really?
Straight after, in terms of tangibility, return on investment.
Oh, I love hearing things like that.
Used them for every photo since.
So wow.
Meet him once every 3 weeks to shoot. So funny.
So he comes in and shoots?
Yeah, so funny. Like he's like, send me your shot list for the weekend. I was like, well, I've got chicken sandwich one way, chicken sandwich another way. Holding it against the wall, like, under the light. I was like, yeah, all right. Like, just like, how many ways to skin a cat? Like,
yeah.
But you do, you take a zombie of 9 angles, different ways, like changing over time.
But a talented photographer is worth any money, I think.
Yeah, and we kind of worked with him over the time. So he had never done video before. He was only kind of getting into photography. So he was doing little clips of us, like showing us making, dressing up the cheesecake and stuff and overlaying some slick music over it. And they got massive traction. Like, so I think first ever videos we did, is we really wanted to emphasize the provenance of the product, go back to be the Displayer series.
I actually watched that last week, yeah.
Yeah, and we're really proud of it in terms of, like, we do champion our suppliers. They're written on our menu. We talk about them. If people ask us about them, they're the best at what they do. Like, we're honored to be able to work with them and deliver their product and combine it into what we do. And it was a really good relationship. So we shot the video and we wanted to do that on one side, but also reinforce the fact that there was a lot behind this brand, and it wasn't just like an Instagram photo type thing, you know what I mean? It was like there's a lot of thought behind it. It was good quality and whatever in that respect. So we shot the 3 videos, put them on Instagram first, got 2,000 views of each video, and we were like, that wasn't a lot of traction, wasn't a lot of comments. And we were like, okay, Freddie the next week shot the cheesecake video, got 250,000 views. Really? In a week. And we queues, like physical queues out the door and stuff, people coming in and showing photos. And for the chicken and stuff as well, people coming in. And I was like, well, this is the medium for that. in terms of the food, in terms of the background of the thing, we can come back to that and find different ways or different methods to promote this, and whether that's like a cue for our team or our guys to talk about the product and engage at different points. And because we don't want that to be drowned out. That's the core of the whole thing. That's the longevity of the brand, really, the fact of what we're doing there. But no, the Instagram thing, we found like, this is mad. So like, look, obviously when we opened the restaurant, I was the restaurant manager there until we opened the second one. So I was in there every single day, and you could see like who was liking it on Instagram. It was the same people who were sitting there. And you're kind of going, there's a bit of traction and tangibility here. Like, this is good.
Yeah.
And then when 10 to 15% of the people are coming in and showing you a picture on Instagram rather than opening the menu, you know, it's working.
Really?
Yeah, big time.
So people will come in and go, I want that. That one.
What is really? That? I want that. Like, don't even open the menu to see what it might be. It's like, just give me that. And you're kind of going, all right, yeah, grand.
That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
So but it's like, not, that's such an insight though.
Massive, massive insight. And it was so key to us then building out even like our targeting demographics and stuff for people to come through just to see.
I love that.
Yeah, really tangible. Like, people always go, when we're going into it, they go, how much do you really get out of social media? What's the ROI? You see the ROI when you're the one between us when we're managing the social media pages and we're in the restaurants and we can see who's coming in. The same person who goes, let's go here tomorrow, does go there tomorrow.
Yeah.
With their friends, I mean, you can see that. And that's the level of detail you do. You look at every single profile. Not like looking at their physical profiles, but seeing
the trends. Yeah,
yeah, seeing who they are, like what they like, that type of stuff. And yeah, so it was really key insights at the start of a business to see what works, what doesn't work.
I think that's valuable advice for every entrepreneur listening. Like, massive. That's huge.
Because like, I have gotten calls of guys from all walks of life and go, I'm really interested in like promoting my business through social media. What did you do? What didn't you do? What worked? You guys are so active in it or whatever. And I was like, yeah, like it's a bit of trial and error and you see what people like. But as I said, knowing your customers. So we knew people were targeting were the most active people on social media. And we're like, well, let's deliver an image or deliver it in a way that it's realistic to how it is.
Yeah.
But it's also, you want to eat it. Like, you want to do it.
There's something about food on Instagram that you're just like, oh my God.
Exactly. I save and bookmark so many places. Yeah. I see it and it comes up. Like, did it over the weekend and actually ended up booking somewhere off the back of it. Like, so.
It works.
It's such an easy way to go. Like, I want that. I want to try that. Do you know what I mean? It's not like you're buying a car or something. Like, you're going to go out and try it. Like,
you talked about already, it's an experience and it's...
Yeah, something different.
While it's not a big investment, there's nothing worse than a bad meal.
No, 100%.
Especially when you're busy or you're doing a date night or whatever, there's nothing worse. You go somewhere, you're like, oh, this place is dumb. Like,
yeah.
It's just not a good experience. And you're just like, oh, let's just eat and get out of here. Like, it's just...
Yeah, 100%. And like, that's a message that we relay to the teams. Like, we're... The guys on the ground get it. We have a really good team now. we always have, I suppose, but it's grown with us, and they really understand the big picture that, like, experience number one, consistency number two, that's the business. Like, you have to have someone who comes in, we open at 12, gets the same experience within reason. It's not gonna be the same as a Friday night when everyone's boozy, but
yeah,
same experience in terms of somebody's nice to them, somebody's friendly, somebody engages them, they get the food's savage, they really enjoyed it, they talk about it, they're like, this is great. Somebody comes up to them and asks them how it was, they genuinely want to know, get some feedback, because we need feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And then they leave and go, yeah, that was deadly. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's nothing more heartbreaking for us than someone goes, yeah, it was all right, or it was great, or
there's nothing worse. So I used to go to a cafe just nearby here, I won't name them, and just the experience was garbage.
Like, yeah,
they were so rude every time. And I remember going in one day, and I'd go in there like every day for a coffee, and there was this one girl, she was super nice. I used to do her all the time, we'd stand and chat. She left, and I went in one morning the week after she left, and I wanted to get like a couple of breakfast items or whatever. I was just picking them up, and your man's like, no, can't do that. I was like, but it's to go. And he's like, you gotta sit down, you go order from the table, and then you can take it away. And I was like, but I've done this a million times, I just want to get to go. He goes, no, we can't do that now anymore. I was like, right. And I never went there again.
Yeah, no, 100%.
You know,
when that happens, you're done. Like,
you are, because if someone's rude to you, and it's quite rare to get really good service.
Mm.
You know, you get really good service, you remember it. Like,
yeah,
it's such a massive differentiator. And I think it's very hard to do, I'd imagine. It's very hard to get that level of consistency in people, because everyone can have a bad day.
Yeah, 100%. No, you're right, it is. And it's about being honest with people, I think, like, as well. It comes back to, like, we're honest about what we want to do and what we're trying to achieve. And we want the guys to be honest with us on the ground, to be like, whether we're happy or unhappy about things. And I think if you can work together, that goes back to like that level of honesty, in terms of, like, if we could be like, this is what we're trying to do as a business, this is what we can offer you as team members, just let's work together to get to this goal. Some people will buy into that, and they'll go, yeah, I want to come on this journey with you guys. And I realize you're transparent about what you're saying, you want it, trying to help us develop. Then they'll buy in, and they'll try and hit that kind of collective goal for it. Because I think all the guys, ultimately, when you work somewhere, you want to be proud of where you work.
It's overlooked so much.
Yeah, you do. You don't want to go in and go, like, I hate this place, or this sucks. Like,
it's just for the money.
Yeah.
Because that'll only get you through for so long.
And yeah, like, it's hyper competitive industries. Like, the guys that we have are really talented and they could go to anywhere.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, and a lot of them aren't.
Was that very difficult at the start? You're a brand new business, no reputation, no brand. How do you get your first 10 staff, 20 staff?
Yeah, that was difficult. We really took a leap of faith. It was very much a speed dating round of. Or, like, talk about the level of detail. It wasn't something I was comfortable with, because you're not seeing them in action, really. Like, kind of, just buying kind of within a way for the kind of front house thing. I'm very much, like, it's personality driven. Obviously, you want to have people with good leadership skills or kind of stuff like that, or emotional intelligence in terms of they're dealing with people. They need to have that. But first and foremost, if they're good crack and they're sound, like, and you can work with them, then that goes not 80-90% of the way.
In terms of the kitchen, pretty much everything else,
yeah, you can do. Yeah, and you want to be around people like that, because it's stressful. Like, I know for myself, when you have people who are really high energy and good buzz, it just changes your mindset so quick. You like when you surround yourself people like that. So that was the kind of criteria for the front house side. The kitchen side was a little bit more difficult. We'd got one or two guys who my business partner knew through other restaurants, which is
okay,
grand. And brought them in. But obviously, going back to when we were building out the process over the 10 months, we made it very process driven, in that, like, we both didn't plan on spending 5 days a week in the kitchen. And that's where, like, that's your moneymaker, what's coming out of the kitchen, effectively, like, the quality of the product. So we needed to nail down on that pretty tightly. So we created something pretty systematic and a good process around it. So we were comfortable that, like, if the guys were given adequate training and shown through it and guided through it over time, that they'd understand it and that they'd get it.
So, and you could repeat that then.
Yeah, because that's what it is. That's it. Back to the consistency level of it. So with the level of volume you're doing, it can be difficult, but it's what makes or breaks it. If someone comes in 8 times and loves it, and comes in once and doesn't like it, they probably won't come back. They'll try everyone else 8 times.
Yeah, that must be very tough, because
it's the hardest
people
part.
People are very fickle about stuff.
Yeah, 100%, definitely the hardest part. And yeah, that's the just going back to the training thing, going back to that kind of buy-in thing. And we hold wider meetings with everyone and go, like, this is what we I think when we had a coffee there, I said to you last day, I was like, there's four different types of people in the business. So like, there's the hospitality hero or the chef hero, the guy that wants to do this for the rest of his life, wants to work with you, sees you as a vehicle or a partner to get there. Great. There's someone there that's wants to do it, maybe not with you, and build up a CV. That's great. Just someone who wants to be there until the next thing. They don't know what they want to do, but it's great. Somebody who just wants a bit of money to go get a couple of beers on the weekend. There's not much hassle and stuff, and that's great. Like, for us, there's massive value in all four of those people, and we have to offer them value. So we honestly just sit around people all the time and say, like, get what you can out of us. If you don't want to be here, leverage our networks, what we can do, what we might know outside of this, how we can help you, how we can help with college, how we can do something else, or introduce you to something you might want to do. If you want to do external training, like in baking, something like that, we can set that up. Like, do you know what I mean? It's just,
so you actually have those chats with people?
Yeah, 100%.
That's incredibly refreshing to hear.
Yeah, because like, any jobs I was in, it was like, don't ask any questions, keep the head down, keep in the lanes, and you'll get there, man. And it's kind of going,
stay like, in your lane.
Yeah, it's very much like, and I fully, like, you can see it by someone's face whether they want to be there or not. And like, the first question has to be like, how are you? Like, what can we do to make your experience here better for as long as you're here? Same to like, one of the like, different examples of guys who've come through us and girls who've come through us. Like, one of the girls, Siobhan, was a musician. She played in the restaurants at one of the openings. We promoted her EP when she launched it through all of her social media. When she does eventually finish her LP, she's going to launch it, and we're going to close down and do it in a restaurant. And
Amazing. She
was kind of using that because obviously leveraging off us, but she was an unbelievable team member and people loved her. And she's since moved to France to finish it. She's going to come back.
Amazing. And
do it there. But like, all avenues are, guys, as we said, like, if they want to do a baking course, want to do something, like, it's something we want to try and ultimately offer people. That, like, for some people, making or serving chicken sandwiches might not be what they want to do, and we fully respect that, but you just kind of try to help them where they ultimately want to get to, and while they're with you, I think that they'll put their best foot forward. They see that you're trying to do it for them, they'll do it for you.
That's an amazing philosophy. That's really cool. And it must be, I think, traditionally quite hard to keep staff in that industry.
Yeah. Well, like, it's, particularly remember when we hired guys in the kitchen to start, for me, not, I would have experience working in and out of places over the years, but not massive experience, particularly working in kitchens. Couldn't believe the cultures, people coming in, like, someone shout. Ultimately, I remember one guy came in and, I don't want to get in trouble with like the employer relations people here, but he came in and we hired him, he shouted at one of the wait staff and then made like a comment about like effectively harassment type thing, like, and just took his apron off and walked him out the front door and was like, see you later, like,
nice.
Walked back in and said, it's not the place we're working in, I don't care what kitchens you've worked in beforehand, nobody shouts in the kitchen, like, nobody talks to anyone like that type of thing.
And brilliant. Yeah,
people are like, but that's not the way it is, I worked under this guy or this guy or this guy, and I was like,
this is how it is here.
Yeah, this is how it is. Like, you know what I mean? I've said to you, like, we don't look at it as a restaurant. I do. That's a massive part of the business, obviously, but I look at it as a business. So you treat it like that. There's no other business in the world you get away with doing stuff like that.
I think times have changed as well.
Yeah, big time.
The last 5-10 years, this ruling by fear and this managing by fear thing is gone now. That's your throwback if that's how you're still trying to do your business.
You'd be surprised though, but yeah.
Oh, it's still rampant. Yeah. Oh, you go into actually some restaurants and you still see people speaking to, you know, you might see a manager speaking to someone that's serving you and you'd be like, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Like, in front of customers as well.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? It's kind of like, and even with teams and stuff at a different level, like emotional level, it's like, I'd be really big into reading books around leadership or management or business process, and a lot of ones you would have been reading when like years ago would have been all based around that art of war mentality in terms of like, it's military, it's business units, it's this stuff. And it's funny the way the different kind of skills are all coming through now. It's mindset, it's how you approach people's emotional intelligence, how you can actually like kind of work together rather than, do you know what I mean, like that side of it, and it's completely different tact. And I think that's just,
careers have changed as well. People don't stay in careers for 60 years now. They don't go in.
And particularly in the industry that we're in, it's very much a transitionary career for a lot of people. Might have come out of college and go do a couple of years until they know what they want to do, or like, say 60% of people might be unsure of where they're going. So like, you have to work to that knowledge, I think.
So take me through, like, I'm conscious of time now, so I won't keep you too much longer, but take me through, like, when was your first one open?
So yeah, March, end of March 2018 was the first one.
And now?
And now, yeah, so yeah, big plans. So number four in January, and we've agreed terms for five for March, and we're looking at three more then around the rest of the country for next year.
That's phenomenal growth.
Yeah.
Very short space of time. In an industry, you can't open a paper without them going, oh, the industry is, you know, there's fires everywhere. Yeah. You know, the industry is falling apart. Like, how are you bucking that trend?
Yeah, it comes back to, I think I was lucky in one way, but just developed a skill set in terms of understanding from that, from my previous career, what made businesses great on paper. I don't mean great intangibly, I mean great on paper in terms of structurally. Mm-hmm. How do they survive? What do they do? How do they work with their working capital? How do they structure their business? How do they get to X profit margin? And that was in my head from the first day, or in our head from the first day, that say like the industry average might be 5-12% net profit or something like that, in around that. So if you sneeze, your arse could fall out of your pants type thing. So, like, we were very much like goal 20%. That's the number. So whether that means selling more, just get more people through the door really hard on it, that has to be the number. So that's been our target in terms of a bottom line achiever. So in terms of structuring like that, though, yeah, we were smart with it, I think, in terms of structuring the business to be ready to grow. And then
I think your LinkedIn is going to blow up after this. There's going to be a lot of people emailing you going, buy that margin, how can we get that?
Yeah, it's funny, like we did that, and then when we opened up the second one, the first one was really straightforward, like payback in 6 months. Obviously that's a reflection of how busy it was.
Wow.
We were like, let's go again, we're ready to go again. And went again then in August that year, 5 months later, or 4.5 months later, went again. And a little bit messier this time, because ideally you want to be taking 30-40% of your core team into a new unit.
Okay,
right. So kind of have that same ethos and have the bed-in period. We couldn't do that because we had one restaurant. So it was a whole new team, and yeah, it was very messy. But it was a lot of learning in it.
That's 5 months later, like.
Yeah, 100%. And even the organizational difference and how you have to approach your day, the differences, in fact your headcount's doubled, everything's doubled, the problems that go with that. What we weren't particularly ready for that, because we were kind of like, oh, we'll go again in February the following year, and said, no, let's just refine this. Like, the biggest, this could fall down if the consistency goes out the window, if the product doesn't stay up. Like, the eyes are on us, we're busy. This is great, let's just hold on to the seat a little bit and just keep, it's not a race, you know what I mean? We don't have to get to X period in 2 or 3 years and try and exit.
Like,
we're trying to refine a business model here and get better all the time. So give ourselves some breathing space, make sure it's right, and then go again. And then
they threw it out the window, went again straight away.
No, we didn't. we started negotiating a deal in November that year for Dundrum, which is the third one, but it took us 7 months to agree to deal.
Wow.
Pretty difficult to deal with it for them, I think. Just because I was trying to, like, I don't know how much I can say now, but trying to delay it a little bit because they were going through massive development around there in terms of what's coming in the line, and didn't want to be in a building site for a lot of it, so push back a bit. Get the right terms. We have a very specific model, as I said to you, like, we have a number in the bottom line we want to hit. That means we can only pay X amount in rent.
Okay.
Based on our forecasts, like all your kind of fixed costs. And we have a specific payback period, 6 to 9 months per unit. Every business is its own business, its own limited company, it's run by its own KPIs, and it needs to be paid back in 9 months, and then we go again. Like, that's the current setup. It might not be the way going forward forever because it limits growth, but that's what we worked for the first 3 units. So everything that was coming across our table didn't fit the model, so we said no, waited, this one was right, felt like it fit the model, we could do it, did it again. The one that was coming in January was right, fit the model, we could do it again. It's been really rational sometimes, because we used to sit there in front of each other, like, egging each other on, going, yeah, we take this one, we go here, and it's like, you're kind of internalising it too much.
It must be hard, though, because it's probably an emotional decision. It must be hard to actually go, no, not the right place, not
so
the right
time. Yeah, there's so many places.
That's just tempting, you see a sexy location, like, oh, imagine having a brand there.
Yeah, it'd be great, and then, yeah, you do it all the time. Then you have to realise, you just have to go back to what goes around that. So, like, you know what I mean, the team, do you have enough people up to a level in your team? So, like, at the moment we're in a structure whereby we have like business leaders in each unit, so each unit's run autonomously and P&L accountable by a business leader and like an assistant leader in that respect. Do you have our idea is then they'll help train develop people in the units, take the next one, everyone moves up in a row within reason. And are you ready? Is your team ready? Is this person ready? Throwing someone into a role that they're not ready, or the team around is not ready for it, it's a recipe for disaster. Like, so
your model must be getting much smarter. I'm just thinking back to all the stuff you talked about earlier, all the data points you had even before you started, and the fact you must be developing a huge data set now around what you're doing.
Yeah, massive. So like, definitely have a really slick rollout plan what we think we do in terms of like what it looks like, what the pain points are, where we need to get to, what the checklists are, what it's going to look like from a cost perspective, what's going to look from who and what and where. We have a pretty good team now, so the last guys who did our building in Dundrum were really slick, so we've kind of agreed a partnership with them to do all the rest of them.
Great.
For next year. So
is it hard to find good people like that?
No, I think most people are kind of, if they're good at what they do and they're passionate about it, they'll be good, you know what I mean? But yes, we kind of were smart about our team. We brought in a cost manager as well. He's been great. Like, he kind of keeps manners on people. We have hired a first ever agency, so every other lease was negotiated ourselves, but these guys are doing it on behalf of us. So because it's obviously, look at the double the size of the business over the next 12-24 months, so just need to build that team, be smarter about it, because if you spend all your time over on one side focusing on the future, everything around you can crumble, and that's just not it's not a smart way to go about it. So yeah, building that team was really crucial. Building our internal team is the most crucial part. So having the guys ready to step up to the roles and having them want to do it as well.
Mm. I've a couple of final questions for you. Yeah. A couple that come in from Instagram, but one I'm curious, just you were talking about that there. The last question I'll ask you is to recommend a book, so you can think about that for a couple of minutes. How do you manage your time? Just listening to you talk there about all the things that you're doing and you know, the current operations you have, like, how do you manage your week?
Map it out. I actually only, you talk about organisation, I'm very much one for right now what I want, my big tasks or my goals for the week and stuff like that. I used to use standard Moleskins and to be all over the place. I couldn't track everything. So I actually got this focus planner, which designs out the pages to go, what's your big tree for the week? Big tree for the day.
Okay.
What are your notes? Tick it off. What's do, delegate, don't. Like, really simple thing. And every page done like that. And I found that like really helpful.
What's that called?
Full focus planner. I use that. And then time-wise, Google Calendar, everything on the calendar. And then even calendar in your gym or your time off, whatever it is, but everything else on the calendar. And having an outcome, because I've spent, like anyone else, so much of my time going to meetings with no outcome, and it's just a waste of time. I think everyone feels that. Like, only having a meeting if there's a definitive outcome to have, and making sure you get to that outcome. But yeah, no, mapping out the time, definitely, because it's so easy to get pulled in so many different directions, no matter what you're doing, so many distractions.
Do you sit down weekly, is it, and just map that out?
Sunday type was, try to do an hour and a half, and that's really different from the way I used to be. Like, that's massive pattern change in the brain, like, but it's just force yourself to do it. You said you lay out your gym gear in the morning. Mm. Just those small changes, like, massively change your life. I think
you get to such a point that you're so busy that if you don't, it's just a mess.
You just won't do it.
The stress levels.
Yeah. Yeah.
The stress levels go through the roof. Cool. We've a couple of questions from Instagram. So Evan asked, how difficult is it to keep profit margins healthy in a restaurant?
Really difficult. It comes down to systems you have in place, like any business, I suppose. But something we did is we built our own internal systems, which track the whole flow of money in and out of the business. So everything from the guys that have purchasing budgets, which is like over a week, which would equate to a gross profit if it's done right. We'll have like waste trackers. We'll have different methods for inventory stock counting, how they do it. We'll have obviously budgets around labour. The guys will be on the ground or working to forecast. They forecast the rest of the year versus what they think we're going to sell per unit, and then they have a budget against that, so they work to that with a bit of a contingency audit. And then below the line costs are what really catch people, so like stuff like repairs and maintenance or other costs, like hidden costs and stuff like that, we work to it. So if a guy comes in and fix something, he does a handover, shows how we fix it ourselves, like, you know what I mean? So then you have an SOP around it to go, this is what we can do here. And
how do you build that out? You said you built your own systems. Like, yeah, so you made it sound quite easy, but how is that done?
Yeah, so come back to, like, I'm lucky to have a proficiency in Excel. So I would have built a macro model, because a lot of the guys, what that is effectively, so a number of dashboards that are fed in by information. So like, say, first two or three sheets are basically like, this is what you spend per category, this is how much you're supposed to spend. As the guys fill in what they've ordered each day, it'll hit the percentage of the budget, giving you a warning to go, watch here. Here's where you overspent, nice. Here's where you underspent. We have dashboards on an itemized profitability level, so what we sold, how much profit per item, areas that they can focus on, shouldn't focus on, stuff like that. We have a waste tracker which shows retail value versus sales, where we dropped out, where we lost out, stuff like that. So really, we try to be like a good crack fun culture, but we're what we like to say, results, but enjoyment orientated. Mm. So it's good crack, it's like loose enough, it's good fun, but we're very much focused on numbers and targets and stuff like that. And I think in this industry, more than anything, you really need to be, because if you've got like a rainstorm or bad weather, and like we had last week, you could lose 40% of a day's sales. And if people aren't really on top of stuff in terms of purchasing or anything like that, then you could lose out.
How predictable is the restaurant business in terms of purchasing or something like that? Do you see set patterns for set months or days, or how does that work?
Yeah, we're kind of, obviously I'm only speaking from my experience, and everyone else is different.
Yeah.
We're relatively new. We're pretty like for like in terms of sales, in terms of throughout the week. We know what our peak days are, our peak times are. Okay. So the guys will use our today available to us. So we'll take 4 or 6 week trends. Mm. We'll analyze what was sold, what was purchased, we'll put it down, and then we'll buy to reflect that for the peak periods. So we're very detail oriented, in fairness, as a business. And I think we're very proactive, and we use that word to start the podcast. Like, a lot of the guys in the industry are reactive because they're trying to do so many things. They're trying to cook, they're trying to host, they're trying to do their accounts, they're trying to do reporting, they're trying to do training, they're trying to do health and safety, like, they're trying to do everything, trying to grapple, to stay alive. And I think if the find the areas you can delegate to people on your own team, or you can outsource externally and stuff like that, and just focus on what the most important parts are. And that would be, from anyone starting off, it can look like, I'm not spending money doing this or doing that, but it's the best money you ever spent. Like,
so know what you're good at and do more of it, and then delegate the rest.
Obviously learn and be aware of it, but like, some of the stuff, like with our accounts and stuff, we outsource that, and some of the payroll.
That's the best decision I ever made.
Yeah, because I remember meeting a guy then, we were a month in and we were focused on our next video or shoot, what we're going to do, how we're going to align to that, our staff event. Like, we do monthly staff events, focus on stuff, just getting the team around. I went into the guy and he goes, man, I spent 12 hours a week doing these fucking delivery reports and invoices. I was like, you can't do this. Like, how can you do this to yourself? Like, that's a third or a quarter of your week or a fifth of your week, depends on whatever you're doing. And the output of that is not that valuable for you.
That's really a repetitive task as well.
Like, just get your head above the water. Yeah,
like someone could. I used to think that I used to start doing my accounts at the start, and I'd spend like a day maybe doing something very basic. And I was like, I reckon someone could do that in an hour.
Yeah.
If they had a head for numbers. And it just was the best decision ever.
Definitely, yeah. And keeping on top of it, but yeah, 100%.
Next question is, do you think a restaurant is a good first venture for young entrepreneurs?
Yeah, I think so, if it's well thought out and it's well executed. So for me, I don't know if I got to this point throughout the conversation, that the reason I had an interest in it the whole time, really interested in that kind of experience in the food and stuff, but it was probably the most approachable industry I found. Like, when I was thinking of setting up a tech business or something else, it just seemed so far away from what I was able to do at that time.
That's interesting, considering your dad's background in tech. It's interesting you saw this.
It felt too far away from where I was. I was like, I can actually, the barriers to entry just seem so much lower, and just to actually get there. Like, it's tough, but every business is tough. Like, so I'm not going to, I think so. I think, like, if you've thought about it, a lot of people can go in and go, like, I enjoy cooking, or like food, or
I enjoy eating food.
Yeah, or I might just buy this and sell it, multiply by four and sell it and stuff. Yeah. It's the type of industry that the margins aren't going to be great. Like, costs are always going up, like massive amounts of competition, because retail's effectively going mostly outside of bricks and mortar. So more restaurants and cafes popping up, more demand for experience, more demand for this and this and this. So you just have to have your wits about you and be realistic about what you're going to face. But if you've got a good idea, 100% go for it. It's particularly in Ireland, if it catches fire, like it can be good.
I was in London last week or 2 weeks ago, and I said, oh, I had time to kill, so I walked back to the train station from the convention centre, and like, I was blown away by the amount of restaurants.
So many.
There was entire streets whereby you looked from one end to the other, and it was all restaurants. Like, as you say, retail is just gonzo.
Yeah. Really.
There wasn't one shop. It was just all scary cafes or restaurants.
Mm. And a lot of those streets are all some homogenous chain as well, which is not where you want to
get.
There
was three press. I was standing on a corner waiting across the road. There was one behind me, there was one on the far corner, and there was one about 40 yards up the other street. They're everywhere.
It's scary. It's like, under so much great creative independent brands that you'd hope them doesn't go like that, but you can see what the costs involved, what people are looking for now in terms of, a lot of the guys we would originally approach were looking for personal guarantees, massive deposits, money you didn't have, and we were lucky with the landlord we got who gave us a chance. Most guys would be like, this is no way, like I want a Pret A Manger or a Costa Coffee or Blue Chip, and money's guaranteed, it's part of a wider group, doesn't matter, this guy coming in,
when they pay the offers as well,
this guy comes in talking a good spiel, but like he could be
I like his PowerPoint.
I like his tie. But like it might not be that practical. You talk a good game, can you execute it? Like, these guys are proven. So I think so. I hope it doesn't go that way, and my fear would be that it does. And obviously part of the fear for our brand is that people view us like that, because we don't ever want to be like that. Because,
but I think it's encouraging. It should be very encouraging for entrepreneurs listening to yourself going, you know, it is doable.
Definitely.
You just have to apply rigorous business practices to it. There's so much negativity, my God, around the restaurant business and everything, that it's actually refreshing to hear someone in the business to go, it is doable. You just got to have logic, clear business sense. Yes.
Yeah. Just treat it like a business.
Yeah, which is a mad thing to say.
It's so simple.
Yeah.
But so many people don't treat it like that in the industry.
It's a motive, I suppose. It's very personal.
Yeah, and it's comes back to, it wasn't seen as a career for a lot of people in college. You don't study to be in hospitality, really. You study to be whatever, and you come out, or as though that's just something people tend to fall into. Yeah. I'm not sure what they're doing. So I think that's why, and then sometimes it can be an extension of that, setting ones up. But if you treat it like a business, it's a great industry. Like, if you, I've met some of the most amazing people I've ever worked with in the industry, and particularly getting to meet customers every day, and their energy, because people tend to go to your place to be higher energy or have fun and heavy energetic, and being around that buzz and stuff is really, it's great. It's great.
What other brands are you looking at? I'll let you go in 2 seconds. I just have two more questions. What other brands are you looking at now going, they're doing some really different, really special?
In any industry?
Any industry, yeah. It can be here, it can be abroad, it can be in any industry.
Strong Roots is one, food wise.
Yeah, definitely.
I just think he's absolutely smashed it.
When I read that headline, 80 million rates, I was like, what?
Just from the food side, he's just smashed it. Like, my even mindset around frozen products before I saw him was like, I wouldn't eat that crap or whatever. Like, it's obviously covered in whatever. Preservatives and all that stuff. And he just saw that, like, people wanted, cause think about how many times you go into a supermarket and you could buy stuff, and everyone tries to make the most of it, but things do go to waste and stuff like that. And it's just like, to have that ability that something's actually good for you, but
because the mindset, if it's in the freezer, it's bad for you.
Yeah,
it's chips or it's waffles or it's pizza.
Exactly.
Whereas now, like, you go in and it's like, get whatever you want.
Yeah,
sweet potato fries or, you know, quinoa burgers, whatever it is. It's amazing.
It's really, really good. I was really impressed by him and the whole branding and everything. How he structured this, the way they actually have the vertical integration to have their own farm.
Oh, wow.
So they supply themselves their own products.
Oh, they're not, really that.
They're not buying off a third party and then packaging. They actually have the full ecosystem of a business from farming to packaging to delivery.
Really? I never knew that. That's interesting.
Hasn't been a massive position for product development or what they want to do. So I'm just really impressed by him. Funny story, I actually had a different restaurant concept called Roots.
Oh yeah.
No connection to that. And I had sent him a LinkedIn message asking, do you want to go for a chat? He didn't.
A little busy right now raising 18 million.
No, I think he thought it was like, this guy is trying to rip off.
Oh really?
So it was like, okay, you know. But no, really impressed by him. Fair play to him. He seems like a lovely guy.
Yeah. On a side note, we're actually trying to get him on the podcast. So if anyone wants to hook us up with an intro to him, do reach out and let me know. I'm sure he's pretty busy at the minute. Every week we give away a book on the podcast. Yeah. I love reading, I love getting book recommendations, so we give away a book. So what book has kind of influenced you or helped you along your business journey?
I think from people perspective, it's a book called Mindset by Carol Dweck. So she was a psychologist from Stanford, and it talks about two different mindsets, fixed and growth. So from understanding that understanding yourself, understanding other people, I think it's a really, really good book, not just in business, but in life, in terms of why people are more persistent, not more persistent, but why people do certain things or get to certain places or achieve certain goals and why some people don't, and how you can kind of change your mindset and just around your patterns of, like we said, setting up things for when you want to go to the gym, mm-hmm. or just making small changes that iteratively will make your life so much better in the long term.
Nice.
And I kind of really bought into that, reading that, read that like 3 or 4 years ago. And I've probably given it to like 7 or 8 people.
Really? Yeah. That's a great recommendation. And Mindset by?
Carol Dweck.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll give away that. I'm going to get that for myself as well. Same. You should check out Atomic Habits, actually, if you like that. Atomic Habits is brilliant. Great. So all people have to do to win it is to tag Mad Egg.
Yep.
And ourselves, and myself, Mr. Gary Fox, on any of the social medias. So where can people learn a little bit more about yourself and the business?
If you're on social media, all our handles are Mad Egg Dublin, if you want to check us out. MadEgg.ie is obviously the website, gives a bit of backstory into us, a bit of a video around our suppliers, our products and whatnot. But at the moment, we're located around the city centre, Charlotte Way, Top Cannon Street, Millennium Walkway, Jervis Street and Dundrum Shopping Centre in Pembroke Square. But yeah, pop in, say hello, and let me know what you think.
Get the cheesecake.
Yeah, and the chicken.
Kyle, thank you so much.
Thanks, Blinker.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode with Connor. I had an absolute blast today recording this show. Getting to sit down with people like Connor is an absolute privilege every week, to sit down with people whose mindset and process and just ideas are so brilliant. So I really enjoyed today's episode. Thank you so much to Connor for coming on. I hope you got some value out of it. As always, if you have, please do get in touch. More and more people are getting in touch to share what they've learned and their story. And I actually want to share just a little quick story from someone who actually did get in touch, a woman called Claire. She got in touch with me numerous times throughout the last, I suppose, 20 weeks, and just shared her story as to how she was about to start her own business. Good news is, Claire has gone ahead and done it. She started her business, so I want to give her a shout out. Only very careful how I pronounce the business name. It's called littlesitters.ie. So it's Ireland's first online babysitting directory. So go check that out. Fair play to her for actually taking the steps to take her idea and start it. So fair play to her. Go check out littlesitters.ie. And just a little bit of housekeeping. As I talked about the live event earlier, it's on December 4th, Dublin City Centre. The venue is to be confirmed, but the first speaker is announced. It is Mr. Devin Hughes, backed by popular demand. If you want tickets, simply go to my website, mrgaryfox.com. There'll be a little button that says Entrepreneur Experiment Live. Click that and you can register for tickets. I will see you there, hopefully on December 4th. We would love to catch up in person. Until that, I will talk to you next week at the same time, Thursday morning, 6 a.m. Talk to you then.